The following Dharma talk was recorded in May 2014 in Excelsior Spring, Missouri. It is one of 21 recordings from the retreat called Insight Dialogue, taught by Gregory Kramer. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. Gregory Kramer is the founder and guiding teacher of Metta Programs and has been teaching insight meditation since 1980. He developed the practice of insight dialogue and has been teaching it since 1995. Gregory is the author of numerous books. Find out more at www.metta.org.
If we try to understand suffering from the top down, we're always going to be swimming through these very chunky territories of our current problems, and those problems, those difficulties are sometimes really large and difficult and need immediate attention, and we give them immediate attention with in the same way we would give immediate attention to a broken leg, even if we had cancer. But to understand really the underneath of suffering is a key for understanding meditation, the purpose of meditation, how to meditate, and this subtlety of the human body-mind is really the key. The subtlety of our senses, the subtlety of the mind, the incredible power and complexity of the brain, the unfathomable nuance of our conditioning through this lifetime or many lifetimes or our lifetime and the lifetime of our parents and our parents' parents, however you want to think of that, the way it comes forward into this moment and how we experience the world, this subtlety is, complexity is astonishing, really. And it's possible to understand pretty quickly, pretty easily even, how this sensitivity of the eyes and the ears, the sensitivity of the body, sensitivity of the mind, works together with the ways we come to perceive and develop a sense of self that's perceiving and go to protect that self and find ways to shore it up, both in terms of finding its ways to find pleasure, sensory pleasure, mental pleasure, and the ways to find a sense of safety in this life, a sense of identity and the safety of this identity that we do as we encounter each other, building up a sense of me with each contact. Rather than go through all of that, I just want to begin with the note that it's this approach, this bottom-up approach to understanding suffering from the tangle and then the sensitive organism moving through the world, vibrating with each contact, vibrating then with its own stored up memories of contacts and aspirations and so on, and being in the constant trying to get that balanced and right and so on. And say, if we want to really understand the nature of suffering, we have to know or appreciate something of that subtlety and refinement of the origin. It's operating right now, even as I speak, constantly vibrating with seeing each other and hearing these words and building this sense of the world. And understand that this is where meditation has, at its very best, the capacity to move down through that chunky surface of everyday problems, and even the big everyday problems, like cancer and like arguments, spousal arguments, and, you know, things like that that really hurt a lot, but are like chunks, down into what's underneath it, which is this pure sensitivity, trying to orient in the world, trying to get safe, trying to get pleasure. That's it. The rest is built on that. On the way through all those chunky layers of the earth's crust of our minds, we find the truth of this statement, the path is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good at the end. Good at the beginning means if you practice just a little bit of mindfulness and tranquility, right away you begin to move through all that chunky stuff at the surface, and it really helps, makes a big difference in terms of how we're able to meet the massive suffering of everyday life displacement. Good at the middle means that as we begin to touch what's underneath, and there's a more subtle layer of release that comes up and feeds and allows the letting go of the holding and fear that keeps all those other things so seemingly intractable or constantly difficult, all of our work issues and our family issues and all that stuff that seems like, well, that's just impossible, it's just too much. We begin to see, oh, wait a minute, at the root of all of this, there are these wantings, and they begin to unravel, to let go a little bit when we say, oh, that's just causing me pain, I'll let go of that behavior or something, or that viewpoint. And this good in the middle is beginning to tap into that wellspring of the raw sensitivity where where these bigger problems, as we might call them, begin to constellate and grow and make up life. So good in the middle is recognizing some of the peace that comes as we do that letting go, and also the unbinding of, you know, some of these heretofore perennial challenges, that they can actually diminish and some of them actually vanish. And good at the end means that there is such a thing as a profound and complete unbinding, where the world is still complicated, but one's response comes from a deep understanding of, as soon as I hop onto this path of trying to satisfy these hungers and kind of machinate my life to get it right, I've lost already. that it's the release from the whole machinating process that's being spoken of. It's a different thing. It's a wholly different class of beast. But it doesn't matter because it's all the same. All these benefits flow from the same pathway. But what this little 5-minute tour is seeking to point to right now as I'm talking is that that tells us something about the nature of meditation and a life in the Dhamma, or shall we say the larger picture of disentanglement. If the practice were designed to just deal at that chunky layer, well, then maybe we would do better to take a communications course or a relationship course, right? Because then we're dealing with the chunks on their own terms. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a tremendous utility. That's a what that is brilliant triage. And if the stuff of life is overwhelming, you need triage. If you've just cut off your hand, you need to bind it before you lose all your blood and die. You're not going to worry yet about sewing it back on or any subtle, you know, surgery. So the more immediate methods and techniques for dealing with the personality and life's issues and all that stuff, there's a zillion of them. Some are good, some are downright lousy, some are brilliant. Some go deeper, some are really shallow, but really good at their shallowness. You know, there's all kinds of things. You take a drug offered by a psychiatrist, and, you know, it's triage, but sometimes there's bipolar or something like that. You know, that's what's called for, maybe. But as you move down underneath, you move through some of the territory that might be covered by other more subtle, let's say, therapeutic approaches or viewpoints, like, you know, something like mindfulness-based interventions for psychology or ways of sort of reprogramming your brain for happiness. There's quite a number of courses like that now. There's a lot of stuff you can do that gets closer to the underneath and that works, and God bless, you know. Life is hard. Let's do what we can. But if you're going to talk about, you know, getting down to the bottom of it, there's no way out but through. There's no quick fix. One cultivates the mindfulness to an exceptional degree, not a common degree, not just a little moment of mindfulness, but a mindfulness that can be sustained and know the rising and vanishing and remain present. And the quality of investigation, of phenomenal experience that isn't just a gentle curiosity. It's really a moving right up next to experience as it actually is in its totality. And remaining there, being present with energy, being fed by joy, but remaining there with tranquility and concentration. until the balance, the equanimity, the concentration, the mindfulness come together, and kind of the deepest, most subtle disentangling way beneath the thinking mind can happen. One of the biggest dangers, I think, about mindfulness is that we actually think we're seeing what the mind is doing. We're seeing little tiny ripples on the surface. You know what I'm saying? You know, this, the mind is so subtle, so vast. But this is where we can work, yeah? So in this practice, we have this opportunity to come to this boundary of the fabricating mind, the languaging mind, the mind of relating, the mind of stuff, and then the awareness that's more subtle than language, that's beneath language. It comes to just the flux of experience that is wordless and yet can be known in some other way. And in this place, together, we can sustain the quality of attention there, together. And perhaps begin to touch down into these more subtle fibers of the tangle. Touch in the more positive framing something of the letting go, something of the felt sense of release becomes available to us. So much more could be said about this, but I just want to stop there and then say a couple of things about practice in relationship to that. Only so, if I say them now before you speak, then if you're having problems with practice, you don't think it's about you. You know it's just about how the practice unfolds. So, one common challenge when people enter insight dialogue is that it seems like the pause or pause and relax pulls them away from compassion. It's like someone's speaking and they may be telling a heartfelt, you know, they may be sharing in a heartfelt way something difficult and is pausing, sort of like distancing yourself from the pain or somehow not being really present for them. Yeah, I know. Oh, that is hard. You know, and the ways that we might view the sympathetic or, let's just say, compassionate approach, when in actuality, that kind of, yeah, I know what you mean, that falling into the story with them, if you look at what's actually going on, they're speaking and they're in, perhaps in their construction, you know, in the fabrication of the story, and now they've got someone listening and they're really going with the story. You have fallen into the story, so you're making it in your mind and that's how you understand, but there's no sati, there's no mindfulness. You are fully in the story. And now you're with them like this. You're both completely fused with the story. And now the person who started with the story, the whole thing is reified. It's made real and solid and becomes a kind of a trap where mindfulness, there's no room for mindfulness at all. It's all the story. And your part in that was just kind of feeding the flame and resonating the reality of it. But if in that moment you pause and you're receiving this heartfelt challenge through words and so on. And you see what's going on. You see how the mind is coming upwards and wanting to fall in, but there's a pause, relax, receive. And there's also a relax, receive of the speaker and the words and the story, but there's balance. Now, this suffering being in front of you is sitting with someone who's balanced in the moment, completely listening, not lost, and they have a chance to awaken from the fallen in-ness. So actually, in terms of action, pause and relax is far more not only effective, but the compassion is the compassion that's coupled with wisdom, not just the sympathy. And there's a similar common concern early in practice, which is that to pause takes you out of a spontaneous way of being, takes you out of a natural flow of mindfulness. And it seems like just a technique, like a practice, like a something you're imposing on experience in some way. Pause, whoa. But here's the thing. It may seem like that, and may even be that at first. But what we usually take as spontaneity is actually just the continual unfolding of constructions, of sankharas, of patterns. And they may be very friendly and in fact sympathetic and, you know, kind of alert and so on. But from a meditation standpoint, the chance of going deeper into that sati that is stable as all of this unfolds, the movement of what we call spontaneous is sort of like just following your wandering thoughts. You know, there may be moments of mindfulness, but it's not going to necessarily catch in. It may. I'm not saying this is not categorical. It may. There's a good chance that it'll just sort of ride along. And if one learns to... Pause is just a word. I'm not pushing a technique. But if one learns to really... touch again and again into that quality of mindfulness that's not caught up in the relational excitement, not caught up in the story, you know, the turbulence of the story, but is completely receiving and sensitive to the world, but has this balance that will conduce over the long term to a practice with some depth, meditative strength. Whereas at first, it's going to seem awkward. May seem awkward, I should say. But I could ask you this. Perhaps you can think back to when you started traditional meditation yourself. Or if you teach meditation, or mindfulness, or something like that. Maybe you've seen what it's like, or you can remember from your own experience what it was like when you first sit there. You think, this is impossible. This is just like, all I'm doing is thinking. I'm aware, but it's just more thinking. You know, got all kinds of little diversions that the mind goes on because it doesn't want to be told something other than its habits is necessary. And it can be strange at first, and it can gradually, if one continues practice, Vipassana meditation can be quite profound. So in relationship to what I was saying before, if we understand that we're looking at a practice that invites us to the underneath, the sort of the sensitive roots of the human situation, that's good not just in the beginning, but also in the middle and the end, then it might give us some sense of direction or hope or something like that.